It's one thing to listen to doom and gloom about food and fertilizer shortages, skyrocketing prices, the cost of living, or your job being outsourced overseas or eliminated due to automation. It's quite another thing to hear practical, immediately actionable advice from experts who can help you reduce the fear, anxiety, and burden of these problems.
Tune in now to the Surviving Hard Times podcast from the Finding Genius Foundation with Richard Jacobs. Before we begin, a note from our sponsor. I'm Richard Jacobs, Executive Director of the nonprofit Finding Genius Foundation and host of the Finding Genius podcast. In late 2016, I was rear-ended at 65 miles an hour by a truck on the highway, which sent me off-road into a ditch. The impact of the collision gave me a concussion and other injuries. At the hospital, a CT scan showed that I had thyroid nodules, which turned out to be cancer. It was then, when I had a biopsy in my neck, that I realized even if I was a millionaire, I wouldn't want a second or a third biopsy due to the pain and the invasiveness of it. And appointments at that time for thyroid experts were 3 to 6 months out, and I was worried about dying now, even if that was irrational. So because of this, I've decided to raise money to conduct a literature review on steroids, on the causes of anxiety and depression, a condition that affects well over 50 million people in the United States and hundreds of millions worldwide. Our goal is to create a codex, a guide, that reveals all possible treatments for anxiety and depression for people that live with the condition, or for loved ones that have it, as my wife and my son do. To find out more about our fundraiser, visit findinggeniusfoundation.org and click on Current Initiatives. And now, to our guest. Hello, this is Richard Jacobs with the Surviving Hard Times podcast, sponsored by the Finding Genius Foundation.
I have Ismail Dwykot. He's a professor of plant breeding and genetics, University of Nebraska, Lincoln. So we're going to talk about the plant breeding work he does. Looks like he's working on pearl millet and sorghum. So Ismail, thank you for coming.
No problem. Glad to be
here. Tell me a bit about your background. What got you into plant breeding and genetics? And then we can talk about the work that you're doing right now.
Well, I mean, I grew up on a farm with my uncle when I was a kid. So I developed some attachment to agriculture and enjoy working with plants. So after I graduated from high school, I went to the university, came to the University of Florida. 1980, and then got my degree in bachelor degree in plant science, and then moved on to PhD, did my PhD on blueberry breeding. And after graduation, I went to Purdue University, was a postdoc, and for 2 years worked on genetics of corn for 2 years. And then after that, I worked for almost 9 years on genetics of wheat. That's at Purdue University. And then after that, my wife and I moved to University of Nebraska, where I start working on sorghum and millet breeding. So and I still continue working with sorghum and millet breeding. I added a few crops lately, including hemp. It's a new crop. It's an old crop, but it's a new crop now here in the States. And there is so much excitement about growing hemp. So I start working with the breeding of hemp. We start collection of some of the...
Did you say hemp? You started hemp. To work with hemp?
Hemp. Cannabis sativa.
Okay. Why did you decide to focus on that for a time?
Well, I read about hemp. It's been cropped overseas for 50 years in Canada, Europe, and China, and Russia. And it has so many benefits and advantage, and it's as an agronomy crop or as a medicinal crop. And so Nebraska, after the 2014 Farm Bill and the 2018, so the state here gave us the opportunity to start piloting a project and experimenting with hemp as an agronomy crop. So, and then here in the Midwest, we have remnants of hemp that's came from maybe 1940 after they banned the hemp. So there is a lot of wild hemp around the States, and it's been growing here for the past 70, 80 years, and has developed a lot of adaptation and resistance to so many biotic and abiotic stresses. So I start collecting some of the wild hams, and hopefully trying to take advantage of these adaptation traits. And with that,
well, tell me some of the questions surrounding hemp that you have. What are some of the experimentation you're trying to do? Are you trying to breed in certain traits into existing?
Well, as I mentioned for hemp, we have a lot of hemp, wild hemp in here in Nebraska, and they've been grown for the past 80 years on their own. Nobody's interfering with them. So survival of the fittest. The plants that survived the drought over the 80 years, still there. The plant that survived the infestation of insects, still the heat. So what I'm doing now, I'm taking these wild collection and trying to breed some of the traits they have into adapted hemp cultivar that we are using now to produce fiber, grain, and CBD.
Okay. So what are you seeing that the wild hemp has? What desirable characteristics does it have that you're trying to breed into the existing
hemp supply? Well, it has a drought tolerance. It has heat tolerance. It has insect and disease resistance. So these are main. They have some of them has high biomass that produce it under low nitrogen and low nutrients. So they have adaptation to low nutrients. We call it nutrient use efficient plants. So we're trying to take all these traits and hopefully move them into adapted cultivars and varieties. So these are some of the traits I'm focusing on now in hemp.
Okay. What are some of the desirable characteristics that hemp growers want right now? I mean, obviously, I guess disease resistance. What about yield? What does yield mean, hemp plant?
I mean, it's not only hemp. Everybody, like wheat, sorghum, millet, hemp, corn, the main focus is yield. And so how you enhance yield? You enhance the yield by making sure that your plants is resistant to insect diseases, can tolerate the drought. It can survive with a small amount of water. So these are the characteristics that hemp growers want. They want a high yielding crops. And one of the advantage of hemp compared to other crops, that hemp has been used as a bioremediation crop, which means that you could use the hemp to clean up contaminated soil that are contaminated with pesticide or heavy metals, or so you could use the hemp to clean it, because the hemp roots absorb all these contaminants and store it into the leaves and stems and the seeds.
Okay. I guess when I don't see fruit on a plant, I think, what is the yield then? So is it just the mass of the harvested hemp, let's say?
Well, it depends. Plants, like if you are
plants that don't have fruits, like what does yield mean on just a vegetative state plant?
Well, see, hemp, it's can be grown for seed or can be grown for its flower buds, which doesn't have seed. It's just the flower buds or the cola, what we call it, the cola on the top. Doesn't have seed. So what are you looking here for? Higher biomass. High biomass translate to higher yield. And the high biomass, that's include mostly flower buds and some of the leaves that contain, for example, if you are growing it for high biomass, you are growing it for biomedicinal reason to produce CBD or CBG or some other cannabinoids.
Okay. So just in Nebraska, is hemp legal? I guess obviously it is. You can experiment on it. I guess people, you know, different researchers had special permits in order to be able to work on it for the past X number of decades, but is it easier now?
Well, hemp has been legal to grow in Nebraska since 2018, after the 2018 Farm Bill that took out hemp from the...
And what is the definition of hemp versus, cannabis sativa in Nebraska? Like what percentage concentration of THC delineates it?
Well, see, the definition of here, the state and most of the state that legalize hemp, we talk about industrial hemp. And the definition of industrial hemp, that hemp plant could be sativa, cannabis sativa, or cannabis indica, that contain less than 0.3% THC. So anything that contain higher than 0.3% THC, the state will come and destroy it. So farmers who grow hemp here for fiber or for grain or for CBD, they want to make sure that the THC level stay below 0.3% THC. So that's legalization of hemp in here. It has, you could grow it as long as the THC level does not exceed 0.3% in it. So in other states like Colorado, California, Oregon, you could grow hemp for recreational purposes, which is what we talk about here, the marijuana, the THC. Here in Nebraska, it's not legal to grow hemp recreational purposes.
But what kind of characteristics do you get when you have hemp versus cannabis plants? You know, with a very low THC concentration, do other terpenes or other chemicals come to the fore? How different is the plant and what's different about it?
Well, it's mostly that when you are talking about hemp plants, they are mostly tall, skinny plants that bred to produce mostly seeds or fiber. To be able to grow hemp for fiber, you have to have single stock plant. And for seed, it has to be also single stock most of the time, and the seed will be on the top. Compared to the hemp that's grown for medicinal or for recreational purposes, the plant will look like a Christmas tree. So you could tell, actually, if you are going to a farm, if he's growing hemp for CBD or THC or for growing it for industrial purposes. I mean, also, it's if you are growing it for medicinal or recreational, the minute you come close to the plant, you are going to recognize the smell, that aroma or terpenes that come out of the plant. While most of the hemp that grown for fiber and grain does not really have much of terpene and CBD and THC on it.
So I was going to ask you about that. So hemp doesn't really have a smell as much as marijuana?
No, it doesn't really. Does not.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, most of the industrial hemp does not have terpenes or the aroma like you could, like you see or you could smell in hemp that's grown for recreational or for CBD.
What's different about industrial hemp versus just regular hemp?
Well, as I said earlier, it has to have less than 0.3% THC.
Industrial hemp versus non-industrial hemp, but not cannabis.
Well, it's the definition of industrial hemp in the state, in the farm bill, indicate that anything that contain less than 0.3% would be considered industrial hemp. It means that it's only going to be used for industrial purposes, for fiber, for grain production, for bioenergy. You could grow the plant and burn it, extract lignin from it or ethanol. So that's the main difference.
Okay, I understand. I thought there was non-industrial hemp and regular hemp, but industrial hemp and cannabis, but it's either industrial uses or non-industrial uses.
Yeah, based on that's the only two categories you could say that it's a hemp that could be grown for industrial purposes, for grain or fiber, or hemp that could be grown for medicinal or recreational purposes. But here we grow hemp in Nebraska that only used for the production of CBD, but it has to contain less than 0.3% THC, so it's going to fall under the definition of industrial hemp.
What is the difference in CBD produced by a plant with very low THC versus a plant with high THC? What's different besides the presence of more THC?
Same CBD is the same. It's exactly the same component, the same chemical structure. There is no difference.
But what if it's like a full spectrum one with additional terpenes and other compounds? Well, there's really no difference in them?
The full spectrum, it has 120 cannabinoids, it has maybe 200 terpenes, it has flavonoids. That's a full spectrum. So sometime when you extract the CBD from these plants, you are going to get contaminants from other cannabinoids or even some THC coming to it. Well, hemp can be classified into three different categories. Hemp that produce mostly CBD, hemp that produce mostly THC and hemp that produce CBD and THC. So there are the genetic control over these three categories, that if you have the active gene or the active enzyme to produce more THC, you are going to have less CBD. If you have the dominant enzyme that for the production of CBD, you are going to have more CBD than THC. And if you have, in the middle enzyme for CBD production and THC, you are going to have plant that produce, say, 10% CBD and maybe 5 or 6% THC. So there are three different types.
Are there different pests that affect low THC versus high THC plants?
No, I don't think so. I think it's the best is that if you are growing it in the greenhouse, you are going to have insect on it. It doesn't matter if it's high CBD or high THC. It depends on how you control or how clean you keep your greenhouse. I mean, insect like mice.
Yeah, but I would think, again, because of the presence of different compounds, like what role does THC have in the wild?
Well,
does it affect certain animals or insects? Like what is, or the cannabinoids, what do they do?
There are flavonoids that are present or the hemp plants produce, and these are present mostly in the leaves that are capable of deterring or killing insects. Okay, so this could be present in all the CBD or THC and even in the hemp plants. These flavonoids that have the characteristics as a pesticides. But still, I mean, if you are growing your hemp in a greenhouse and you have mites, spider mites infestation, it doesn't matter what if you have CBD or THC. You have to make sure that you never had that infestation to begin with. And if you have it, you have to really to control it. And in most cases, if you have it, it's very hard to get rid of it. So you have to lose your crop because you cannot use any synthetic pesticides on hemp that's going to be consumed by a human. So you have to use mostly essential oil and some other organic based material to control the spider mites, which it's not really that effective.
Is the majority of hemp still grown outside, or is a lot of it grown indoors and hydroponically?
Well, that depends where you are at. So if you are here in Nebraska, in Kentucky, they are growing most of their hemp outside. And if you are growing your hemp outside, you have less problem with insect compared to if you are growing it inside. So it's if you are growing it hydroponically or in the greenhouse, you are going to make sure that you keep it clean. You make sure that anybody come in clean and have gloves and protective gear. So especially if they've been visiting other farms, so you won't transmit these diseases to your plants.
Any other further experimentation you're doing, particularly on hemp? Any other questions you're trying to answer about it?
My main focus is actually is my research on hemp is limited because of we don't really have the funding. If you don't have money and fund, you cannot really do a lot of research. So just mostly basic research, trying to, on a small scale, develop varieties that are adapted to Nebraska and the Midwest climate. Because hemp is a short day plant, which means that the plant flower when the days get shorter. So most of the hemp we had a few years ago came from Canada and Europe. They have longer days than we do, so which means that the plant, when you bring them to Nebraska or to the Midwest, they flower too early or too soon before they reach their ultimate size. Would that translate to lower yield? So what we are doing here, trying to develop varieties that are adapted to our climate and to our day length.
Okay. And just briefly, your bio mentioned that you're working on sorghum and another plant. What other plants are you working on? Millet. Okay.
Sorghum.
What are their particular uses, and what are you trying to do with them?
See, it's sorghum and millet are ancient crops, so they're nothing new. They came from Africa. You're very unique species that are adapted to stress and do not require high concentration, high amount of fertilizer and irrigation like corn, for example. So in Nebraska and Kansas and Texas, there are more than 10 million acres of sorghum that grown for grain, for the seed. And the seed, one of the unique thing about sorghum seed that has no gluten. So if you are a celiac, you could eat sorghum. If you can't eat wheat, you could eat sorghum. Also, beside that, sorghum as a grain could be used for production of ethanol. It's the same amount of, it's like corn. You have corn that's 30% of the corn crops are being used to produce ethanol. Sorghum is the same thing. You could use sorghum seed to produce ethanol. Also, in sorghum and millet, we have three different types. We have grain sorghum, we have sweet sorghum, and we have forage type. So there are three types. So you have a grain that has, I mentioned, its uses. You have forage that could be used for animal feed. And then you have the sweet sorghum. Sweet sorghum, it's been used for the past 150 years in the Southeast to produce molasses and sugar. In other countries, they use the sweet sorghum to produce ethanol because it can be treated exactly as sugar cane to produce high concentration or high amount of ethanol from the stalk, because sweet sorghum stalk has high concentration of sugar in it compared to the grain sorghum that just has little or no sugar in the stalks. So these are the three types of sorghum. Millet is the same thing. Millet is, you have grain type, you have forage type, and you have sweet type. And millet, it's grain type. Millet is, it's known to be as a superfood, the grain. It has high concentration of omega 3 fatty acid. It's not a major crop in the United States as a grain type, but it's a major crop as a forage, for forage uses, mostly in the Southeast.
Yeah. I have two cockatiels that love millet. Millet spray, I don't know if it's the same, but I give it to them in the tiny little seeds.
Yeah.
It looks like miniature grapes in a way, and they eat that like crazy. They love it.
I mean, it's you could, in India, they grow 10 million hectares of grain millet. And so they use it as a food. They make bread out of it. So each individual, the per capita, I think it's about 23 kilogram annually per capita in India, they use millet. Here, it's not really a big crop. Yeah, it's not a big crop in here, but in Africa and India, the reason that it's a major crop because they have harsh condition. They have drought, and millet and sorghum are adapted to this condition. So that's why they grow large acreage and or hectares of it in Africa and in India.
Okay, very interesting. What are you trying to do with the various types of sorghum and millet? Again, you're trying to maximize yield, or are there other questions that you're trying to answer with those crops?
Well, it's for sorghum, we are trying to develop high quality forage type, which means does not have any cyanide inside, so cows could eat it at any stage. While millet, for example, forage millet does not have the torusuic acid or cyanide in it. So that's the difference. So we're trying to develop a high quality forage type in both sorghum and millet. A grain, we are trying to develop high yielding sorghum varieties that also adapted to low amount of nitrogen and nutrients and can tolerate drought and heat. We're also in sorghum, we are working on increasing the amount of sugar in the stalks. So someday, if in other countries they are using it for the production of ethanol, hopefully someday we can use it to here. So the higher concentration of sugar, it means translate to higher concentration of ethanol. 1 acre of sorghum produced twice or three times the amount of ethanol that produced from corn grain. So If we are adapting someday sweet sorghum as a bioenergy crop, that is going to be very cost effective compared to corn, because it to require less input than corn and produce high amount of ethanol per acre compared to corn.
Okay. Well, very good. Ismail, where can people find out more about your efforts? Where can they go to, you know, see your papers and your work?
Well, I mean, my papers are published throughout the scientific journals. I have more than 100 manuscripts on sorghum and millet and hemp. I mean, they could contact me if they need any information. IDWEIKAT2@unl.edu. I'd be happy to provide any information they request, including manuscript and journals.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, very good. Ismail, thank you for coming on the podcast and sharing your knowledge. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Before you stop listening, ask yourself, what are one or two useful things you heard on this podcast that can help you overcome food and fertilizer shortages, skyrocketing prices, the cost of living, or your job being outsourced overseas or eliminated due to automation? Please like and subscribe and tell your friends and family about their Surviving Hard Times podcast. We're all going to need help now and in the near future.